So the Dhamma for today is called the Five Khandhas. Khandha is a word that is often translated as aggregates. So we say the five aggregates. But it's really a much simpler word, and it just means something like groups or categories or division. Meaning that reality can be divided up into five parts. It's one of the most common divisions that the Buddha used to talk about reality. So, actually is one of the most important aspects of the Buddha's teaching, something that is core. Remember, we talked about the Four Noble Truths as being core. Well, this is the first noble truth. The khandhas are often described as the upadana khandhas, meaning things that you cling to. And so they're the first noble truth, because anything that you cling to is a cause for suffering, or you suffer because of the clinging to it. That thing causes you suffering because you cling to it. More importantly, the khandhas act as a description of reality from an experiential point of view, an experiential perspective. They show that the Buddha's teaching is a different way of looking at reality than what we ordinarily are accustomed to. The ordinary way of looking at reality, or what we think of as reality, is people, places, things, entities. Of course, this is one of the key aspects of the Buddha's teaching, that he denied the existence of entities. That reality is not made up of entities, things. Reality is made up of experiences, moments. So that a reality arises and ceases for each experience. And so when we talk about the five aggregates, it's important to understand, or the five khandhas, that they are not parts of an entity. They're not parts of a being where you could say, well, this is a being and these are its parts. They are parts of momentary experiences that arise at the six senses. So the eye gives, the experience of seeing gives rise to the five aggregates, the experience of hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, and thinking gives rise to the five aggregates. These are, you could say, the components of one moment of experience, are the five aggregates. The importance of them and why they relate to, or how we relate them to the path and the process of understanding suffering, is that they also comprise the way by which one triggers clinging, craving, and clinging, and suffering. So one suffers because of the working of these five things. And more importantly, one craves and one clings because of a lack of understanding, because of delusion and ignorance and a clouded mind that is not clearly aware of the workings of these things, meaning they are allowed to cause us stress and suffering because we aren't paying close attention. If we knew, if we saw that the way we were doing things was leading to stress and suffering, we would stop. That is the very clear key concept of Buddhism, that simply by seeing, not by fixing, changing, or controlling, but simply by seeing that, hey, this is causing me suffering, seeing again and again until the mind appreciates the futility, the absurdity, the wrongness of this sort of activity, that the change occurs, that one frees oneself from suffering, that one lets go, stops clinging. So they are also the object of our meditation practice. When we talk about mindfulness, we talk about being mindful of the four foundations of mindfulness. Well, the five khandhas are the object of the four satipatthana. You could say that the four satipatthana are a practical way of approaching the mindfulness or the understanding of the five aggregates. And I can explain how they're really basically the same thing in a different format. So the five khandhas are Rupa Khandha, the group of, or the aggregate, I guess, the aggregate of Rupa, which is form. Vedana Khandha, the aggregate of feeling. Sanya Khandha, the aggregate or the group of recognition. Sankhara Khandha, the group of mental formation. And Vijnana Khandha, the group of, or the category of consciousness. That part, these are the five parts of experience and more importantly of the process of clinging and craving and suffering. So we take them as our object. It's valuable for us to know about them, and it helps us to understand how craving occurs. Rupa, of course, is the trigger for the vast majority of our craving. Rupa means anything physical. It's what we normally think of, as I said, in the world. We think of the world as the physical world. Things we see, things we hear, things we smell, things we taste, things we feel. These physical realities that we combine and process to create entities. We see something and we see it enough and in enough different ways, and we gain the perception that this is a person and so on. This all begins from the experience of seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and feeling. Even our meditation practice, we start by focusing on rupa. We call it kaya in the four satipatthana, but when we focus on the stomach, this experience of expanding or tensing of the stomach, this is rupa. When you walk, it's an experience of rupa. It's the very basis of ordinary, most of our ordinary experience, all of it except for what goes on in the mind. And clearly you can recognize the relationship this has to craving and clinging. Things we see are one of the greatest triggers of craving and clinging. We see beautiful things and we want them and we like them. We see ugly things and we're upset by them, disgusted by them, turned off by them, afraid of them even. Hearing beautiful sounds, music or sounds of nature, and we're attracted to it. We like it. We prefer it. Hearing unpleasant sounds, sounds of noise or construction or yelling or shouting or even music that we don't like or things that other people might like, and we get upset. Smells of good food, smells of perfume, smells of incense or natural smells can be very attractive, and others are of course very repulsive. Smells of urine and feces and body odor and food that we don't like, burnt smells and bad smells, smells of flatulence and so on. So tastes we like or dislike. Taste is a big one because of how it affects our health. It's a big part of, it's an easy one to see that the nature of how craving leads to suffering. You can see how with the wrong sorts of food, if it becomes obsessive, and it easily does become obsessive, then it can lead to great suffering through poor physical health, heart disease, diabetes, and so on, blood pressure, etc. Liver disease, kidney disease, a lot of it comes from taste, craving for taste. And of course, the taste that we don't like, when you have to eat food that is unpleasant, it can ruin your appetite, it can prevent you from eating adequately, and can affect your life, affect even your meditation practice if you're not mindful and able to eat food that is not normally pleasant to you. And physical sensations can be quite pleasant. The sensation of your bed when you lie down, blankets, warm sensations when you're cool, cool sensations when you're hot, can be quite pleasant. Physical tactile sensations of touch. And of course the opposite of harsh sensations, sensations of tension or stiffness, the hard sensations of bones tensing and so on, can be a precursor for pain and great suffering. So in brief, we're tormented by the five senses, we're tormented by rupa. We're tormented not by it in and of itself, but it causes us torment because we react to it. It's the beginning of so much of our stress and suffering as we're pushed and pulled, chasing after things that we want, consuming again and again the things that bring us pleasure, and stressing and suffering when we meet with things that are unpleasant. Never at peace, never free from, never content with experience as it is, constantly having to seek out more and more, never satisfied. So our practice of focusing on rupa may seem banal, even saying to yourself seeing or hearing, let alone focusing on, say, the stomach, may seem like something quite meaningless, useless. But our familiarity with rupa is precisely what breaks the trigger, keeps us from being triggered, or teaches us the suffering that comes from being triggered. As you watch again and again how you're triggered by sights and sounds and smells and even the physical movements of the body, how you engage in grasping and clinging and craving and so on. Simply by paying attention to the body teaches you the stress and suffering that comes from craving and clinging. And it's a great object to watch, not for it in and of itself, but for what the mind creates as a result of the experiences of the rupa. So it's of the most basic importance. It's where we start our practice. We start by focusing on rupa, because the other ones are more difficult to see. They take focus and they take some measure of skill to actually pay attention to. By focusing on the rupa, the other four become clear as a result. So for example, vedana, the second one. Simply by focusing on the rupa, you come to see how vedana arises. You see how pain arises, how pleasure arises, how calm arises. These will arise not continuously, but from time to time. And they make up the second part of our practice. Vedana in Satipatthana is the same as the Vedana in the five aggregates. So this one is the exact same thing. Vedana is called by the Buddha the meeting place of everything. It's sort of the juncture. You can say it's the juncture where objective experience meets with subjective clinging and craving, reaction, judgment. So up until the point of vedana, there is no problem. There is no suffering because there is no craving and no clinging. But as vedana arises, because of the existence of ignorance or the lack of existence of wisdom, we cling to vedana. Vedana is the point where we give rise to craving and clinging. So when you see something beautiful, there arises pleasure and there arises an attachment to the pleasure. Vedana, the Buddha said, vedana paccaya tanha. Because of vedana, there arises craving. When we have painful feelings, we think of the pain as suffering. We think of the pain as bad, but that in and of itself is where the suffering comes from. Not from the vedana, but the fact that we think of it as suffering. If we're able to see vedana as just vedana, pain as just pain, even see pleasure as just pleasure, calm as just calm, and not think of them as good or bad, not be attached to them, but also not try to chase them away, then we can continue on in objective experience. We come to this juncture and we take the right path. We continue on with the objectivity seeing experience just as experience. We have contentment, we have presence, we have peace, because we're not carried away by needing to change. When you become attached to pleasant feelings, you need those pleasant feelings. You want them, you seek them, you strive for them, you prefer them. You're discontent unless they arise. The same with calm feelings. Calm feelings become a subtle attachment where you want to maintain them, find any way to continue and to cause them to continue and persist. And then when pain comes, you're disappointed, you're upset. Pain were triggered into stressing and suffering and obsessing over how to remove the pain, how to become free from the pain. Sometimes even without realizing it, adjusting our position, standing up when we're sitting down, lying down when we're sitting up, finding a way to free ourselves from the painful sensations, rather than just seeing them as pain for what they are. And so we cultivate and feed the craving and the attachment, the liking and the disliking and the partiality, and so we're never at peace. This is why peace cannot persist, because of our need for things to be in a specific way and our inability to accept things in another way. The third, sanya. Sanya means recognition. So recognition plays a small but vital part or important part in the both the arising of craving and the arising of mindfulness. So sanya simply is nothing negative, nothing unwholesome, but it is this recognition that triggers, or that is part of what allows us to trigger attachment, because we recognize that this is like that. Sanya means knowing that something is similar. So when you see a flower, knowing that it's a flower, or even just knowing that this is seeing. When you walk, knowing that you're walking. These are very simple sanya. But these are the same conditioning that leads to a remembrance that this brought us happiness, this brought us pleasure, or this brought us displeasure, this brought us suffering. And as a result, immediately triggers craving and clinging or aversion and dislike. So when you see something beautiful and remember how this beautiful thing brought you pleasure in the past, it brings pleasure again, it brings desire for that pleasure. You see food, for example, food that you know tastes good. Well, seeing it doesn't satisfy your hunger, doesn't satisfy the taste, and yet you crave based on the seeing. You haven't even tasted it yet, and the craving has already arisen. It's an obvious thing, that's how craving works. Craving arises because of seeing the object and recognizing it as something that brought you pleasure before. This is a part of how the addiction process works. If you didn't recognize the food as something that you'd eaten before, something tasty, or if you don't recognize someone as a male or female form, or as a beautiful form, an attractive form, without that recognition, there wouldn't arise the craving and the clinging. And the same goes with aversion. When you see a spider and you recognize it as a spider, and you've had these fear of spider in the past, then that recognition of the spider, this is the same as that thing, triggers the fear, triggers the aversion. When you see someone and you remember an argument you had with them and you're angry at them, every time you see that person's face, it can often lead to anger or dislike, ill will towards that person. So recognition, as I said, is first of all an important part of the arising of craving, but it's also an important part of how mindfulness arises. Because if you're able to stop the recognition at a simple recognition of seeing or hearing, and keep the mind in that state where, say, for example, vedana, feeling arises of pleasure or pain, and you recognize it just as pain, you don't let your mind get to the moment of judging it, attaching to it. Sanya is the moment where you kind of have the choice, or it can go both ways. And this is why we remind ourselves, because you're recognizing it as seeing, and you just remind yourself that is seeing, or you're recognizing pain and you just remind yourself, hey, that's pain. Because that keeps the mind, that is what allows the mind, when you get to this moment of deciding to judge or react to things, you create a reaction that is objective. This is how the objectivity continues. At the moment of vedana, you see it just as vedana, or seeing as seeing, hearing as hearing, walking as walking. Seeing things just as they are, this is the Buddha's teaching in the Satipatthana Sutta. Gacchanto va gacchamiti bhajanati. Knowing it just as it is. When going, one knows I am going. When you know it just as that. Or when the Buddha said, ditte ditta matang bhavisati. Seeing is just seeing. Or what is seen is merely what is seen. And this is what is called the proximate cause of sati, or mindfulness. It's what we call tira sanya. So I said this is sanya recognition. Tira sanya means the strengthening of the recognition. When you remind yourself, when you reify that recognition, so you stop at the recognition. Yes, it's pain, but it's not bad. It's not a problem. Problem is what happens next. Problem is the judgment, is the reaction. So through the practice of this repetition or this reminding oneself, one gives rise to what we call sati, which means the remembrance of the thing just as it is. So you remember and you grasp the object and you have a firm awareness of pain just as pain, or seeing just as seeing, or so on, thinking as thinking. So sanya is crucial in the practice of, or the cultivation of mindfulness, as well as and essential in the arising of craving. This is where it can go either way. The fourth one, sankhara, mental formations, doesn't play a part in the decision making. Rather, it is the decision that has already been made. So sankhara is where the problem arises. You could say the only problem of any of the five khandhas is in sankhara. But on the other side, all of the good qualities, any good decisions you make, are in the sankhara. So after recognizing something, as I said, you have a choice. You can decide that it's good or bad, or you can decide that it is what it is. And then it gives rise to mindfulness. Well, mindfulness is one of the mental formations. You can think of mental formations kind of as what you think about something, so how you judge it. If you like it, well, that liking is a sankhara. If you dislike it, that disliking it is a sankhara. This is the meaning of sankhara in this context, as a mental formation. In other words, a reaction. Even if you think of someone as tall, well, that person is very tall. Well, you can think of that as sort of a sankhara, because you're kind of judging, even though it might be a neutral sort of judgment. Most importantly, this is where greed lives, this is where anger lives, this is where delusion lives, this is where all the bad things live, and where all their opposites live, where wisdom lives, where mindfulness lives, where compassion and so on, kindness, these are all in the sankharas. And important here is that even though it's not a part of the process of the cultivation of mindfulness, all of these things can also be taken as an object of mindfulness. Meaning, if you give rise to anger, well, this should be familiar to you, but just to point it out, that it's not to say that once you've gotten angry about something, it's too late, or when you crave for something, when you want something, when you like something, that it's not too late. You can actually take these as an object of mindfulness, because they persist and they grow and they feed, or they are fed by a continued appreciation of the object. When you like something, you begin to like the liking, or you grow the liking into a wanting, and you grow the wanting into a needing. And the same goes with anger. Anger doesn't start usually at anger, it usually starts with disliking. Maybe you dislike someone or you dislike something, but if you let that dislike grow and fester, it means moment after moment you're deciding, you're being triggered, you're judging again and again and again. And the disliking becomes anger. And so all of these things not only can but should be taken, and it's very important, as we've stressed during the course, to take them as an object of mindfulness, somehow first and foremost, because of how dangerous they are. If you've already started liking something, This is where the real problem arises, because it might be small, but it will grow into something quite dangerous, quite harmful, poisonous for the mind. And if you dislike something, any kind of delusion, worry, fear, conceit, doubt, and that sort of thing, why these hindrances are very important to be mindful of. So even all of these, of course, we take as an object of mindfulness, even after we've judged something, because the judging doesn't stop at one judging. So when you say to yourself, disliking, disliking, or liking, liking, or wanting, wanting, you can see how the change from judging something by liking or disliking it, to seeing even the liking or disliking just for what it is, changes the state of mind. And suddenly you're objective. You're not feeding the liking, you're not feeding the disliking, you're just watching it, and you're changing the nature of your mind to be objective, to be neutral, to be patient, calm, and content, not discontent, not needing things to be otherwise. This is sankhara. Sanya and sankhara are under the fourth satipatthana. So mostly we have the five hindrances, but we also have the five aggregates, and mostly we pay attention. Sanya is not really something that you can pay attention to, it's something that, as I said, you use, it's a part of the practice. But sankhara is definitely the five hindrances, for example. These are an important part of sankhara. The bojangas, which we can talk about later, these are under dhamma in the four satipatthana, if you're wondering where they fall. The fifth khanda is called vijnana. Vijnana is simple, but of course perhaps the most important or the most powerful of them all. Vijnana just means consciousness. Vijnana is the reason we have experience at all. Vijnana, you could say, is the experience, right? Consciousness, the awareness of something. When you're aware of a sound, there's an experience of hearing. But at the same time, there will not be an awareness of seeing. You can only have the experience because of the vijnana. Sometimes you'll be reading a book or thinking about something, and someone says something to you and you don't even hear what they say. You don't process or remember what they were saying because your mind was somewhere else. Sometimes you'll be watching the stomach rising and falling, and suddenly you get distracted by a thought and you realize you weren't even aware of the stomach rising. Or walking, your mind will get distracted and you'll realize you've walked several steps without being aware of any of the foot movements. In the beginning this can be hard to see, and a meditator will think their mind is in many places all at once, but as you gain better concentration, better clarity, you'll begin to see that it's actually moments going from here and back, from one place to another. So vijnana is, of course, essential in all aspects, wholesome and unwholesome. Vijnana is a part of how we give rise to craving and clinging. Most importantly about vijnana is to understand that we can't control, like all of these aspects, we can't control what we experience. Rupa, we can't control what we see or we hear. Vedana, we can't control whether we have pain or suffering or pleasure or calm. Sanya, we can't stop our recognition of a spider, or we can't have the recognition of things as pleasant all the time. Sankhara, we can't control things to like everything or to enjoy everything. We can't control anger, to only be angry at the things we want to be angry at, and so on. But most importantly, vijnana, we can't control what we experience. The overall, in summary, our experiences are not under our control. We can't stop ourselves from having unpleasant experiences. We can't say, let my experiences only be the experiences that I want. And this is really the biggest lesson, and the reason why we should never cling to anything, is because it's not under our control and we can't predict. Our expectations of how things should be, of what we should experience, trying always to create positive, pleasant experiences and run away from unpleasant, negative experiences, is what causes the stress and suffering and leads to constant discontent and habits of clinging and craving, and habits that lead to suffering. So vijnana is not something you necessarily have to pay a lot of attention to in terms of noting it. So you can note when you are aware of something and say aware or knowing or that sort of thing. But through the practice of mindfulness, this is the essence of what you come to see, is that experience is not something to be clung to. First of all, that reality is made up of moments of experience, it's not made up of entities. And second, that those entities are what we cling to, what we crave, and what leads to stress and suffering. And third, that they are not worth craving and clinging, and the suffering really isn't worth it. That our best course of action is to be mindful and to see experiences just as they are, and to have contentment with whatever experiences arise or cease, come or go, and find peace for ourselves in the here and now. So those are the five khandhas. Again, the nature of suffering, in the sense that any of them you cling to, or in general any experience that you cling to, will cause you stress and suffering. And again, they are the nature of reality. They are a reminder that reality is experiential. And in that sense, they are core to the doctrine of the Buddha, an important part of our practice. And also another way of looking at the four satipatthana, so core to our practice of mindfulness as well. So that's the five khandhas, and that's the Dhamma for today. Any questions?
In the rupa aggregate, are the sense media included, like
yes.
The eye itself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the eye and light is how seeing arises, and those are the physical aspects. The eye and the light and the consciousness, these three things lead to experience. These two are, the eye and the light are the rupa. So you can't see something without the eye and the light. If there's no light, it's dark, you don't see. If there's no eye, even though there's light, you also don't see. But consciousness is the mental aspect that, that creates the scene. So yes, the eye, they're called subtle, or there's some word for them. They are the fine experience. The eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, these sensitivities. Body sensitivity is the coarse one, because body sensitivity is of the four dhatus. So the four elements are the basis of rupa: earth, air, water, and fire, meaning hardness, softness, stiffness, flaccidity, heat and cold, and cohesion. And these are would create the seeing, but the seeing is not, you don't feel tension when you see, for example, or heat or cold when you see. That would be a physical sensation. So the Abhidhamma gives some detail and some differentiation, which is why the question can arise, are they really rupa? They're not rupa in the sense of this kind of sensation that you have in the body, but they are physical, and they are caused, derived, I think, is actually what they're called. No, I can't remember the term. It's still rupa. So memory is, sometimes you translate sanya as memory, but memory really comes from recognition. So sanya really means recognition. If I see you, I remember you, right? That's recognition, because I recognize you. That's how memory works. What we call memory comes from recognizing that this is like that. Like if in your brain does lots of weird things, and sometimes it gives rise to a vision of something you've seen before. It doesn't show you the past, but it's an echo, like, and you say, oh, that's like what I experienced before. That's recognition. That's called sanya. So that's how memory comes in. Thoughts are sankhara. Thoughts are the processing of an experience. What you think about something, is it good, is it bad, or any kind of idea about it. That's under sankhara. All for today.